This is the Urban Political,
the podcast on urban theory, research, and activism.
Today's podcast is an interview with two scholar activists from the UK about the so-called new municipalism: Bertie Russell from the Urban Institute at the University of Sheffield and Matt Thompson from the Heseltine Institute at the University of Liverpool. We spoke about the difficulties of defining the new in new municipalism. We traced some of the roots to this movement, and we talked about its development in the UK context in particular. Okay, so I'm here with Matt Thompson of University of Liverpool and Bertie Russell, University of Sheffield, who was sitting, I think it's Prince's Gardens, Imperial College, and taking a break from the RGS IBG conference. And the reason we're doing that is because we want to talk about new municipalism or radical municipalism. And Matt and Bertie have organized the four sessions, which bring together not just scholars, but also activists. I don't know if you've got any, and some policymakers, kind of administrators as well, which is fairly unusual. And it's obviously great that that can happen at a conference like the RTS. So guys, just to get started, imagining that somebody might have heard of this term, new municipalism, but doesn't quite know what it means. How would you define it to them?
So we'll give it a couple of goes, shall we, and then see. Do you want to, I'll start and then you correct me.
Yep.
Oh, we'll see where it goes. Okay, yeah. Well, that maybe already, I think, gives an indication that that you're probably not going to find one paragraph definition of this written down in some dictionary of human geography handbook, which really clearly lays out what this means.
Although there is a dictionary entry for the Encyclopedia of Human Geography this year on new municipalism, so we'll see.
Oh, is there? Who's writing that?
I can't remember, but we'll see. We'll see whether there is a paragraph.
No,
it might be.
If I don't know who's writing it, I can offer that it'll probably be wrong. But we'll still, without knowing who I'm offending in saying that, but. So yeah, I don't think the starting point is that this is a really clear political program or a really clear area of study or a very specific set of principles. But I do think that that doesn't mean that it's an open card for anything to call itself new municipalism, which, especially talking within the context of the UK, is really important because it's terminology which I think some people find quite sexy and use quite freely without necessarily considering the implications of what it means or what networks use this terminology as well. I haven't begun to offer a definition there, I'll be aware of. But
I mean, maybe the fact that it is so open speaks to what exactly it is. So, you know, you said yourself, it's not anything goes, but the fact that it is open and contestable and, you know, it speaks to the fact that it is about dialogue and it's about democracy ultimately. So the actual, you know, the root and the thrust of the term is around, you know, re-establishing, transforming forms of governance at a city regional scale or a city scale or a municipal scale. I think in its broadest term, if we're going to start moving toward a definition, in its broadest term, I think it's probably, for me, it's best defined by Corporation Jackson's sort of slogan, which is, if I get it the right way around, socialising the economy and democratising society, which could be anything, right? That could be just generally socialism. So what makes it municipalism? I don't know.
Well, I think why it's of particular interest to geographers, which is not a sentence I thought I'd ever say, but it's because it's got a question of scale is fundamentally in this, right? So this is definitely be about a transformative approach, transformative projects. It's about democratization. It's about developing new institutions where people are rooted much closer in space, but also in terms of emotionally to decisions which they can affect and shape. So it's fundamentally a question about power, building a new landscape of power. And as soon as you're talking about that, it means that we don't fall back onto traditional understandings of how you think social change might happen. And most importantly, that means not fetishizing the nation state as being in somehow a coherent agent that has more power than anyone else, but equally not fetishizing local government and thinking that local government in some way has loads more power or capacity to undertake radical projects than anyone else. Because I mean, objectively, it doesn't in any context. But it is asking what scales are most appropriate for hearing new abilities to exercise power, new forms of institution. And I think the premise that really comes through is, if we're starting to build new forms of new institutions and new ways to exercise collective power, democratic collective power, the best place to start is in the place that's closest to us. I'm very carefully trying to not use the word local, but if we talk about the closeness of people within cities or within municipalities, perhaps, to not just talk about cities here, that closeness of relationships, of circuits of production, of experience and so on, means that the municipality is arguably a privileged place to begin developing these new landscapes of power and to exercise collective agency over our lives, which fundamentally was what largely people are missing in society.
So what makes it different then from social movements and community activism that geographers have been banging on about for 3 decades? You know, so you said earlier, you know, it's not to fetishize the nation state or local government. But equally, I'd say, and I thought this is where you were going to go when you started saying that sentence, equally, it's also not about fetishizing social movements.
Totally, yeah.
So it's sort of, so a lot of the stuff, you know, a lot of the bump out there on new municipalism would talk about, you know, a 45 degree angle between horizontalism and verticalism, or, so, you know, new forms of power. Hart and Nagle talk about it, new forms of leadership that aren't necessarily, you know, the classic forms of leading from the front or leading from above and determining a strategy, but actually letting social movements do that, but still acknowledging the fact that there is leadership and there is a need for some vertical power in there, and the fact that that power lies in vertical institutions is important, I guess. So it's sort of like it's sort of moving away from, well, I wouldn't say the traditional, but the kind of, we've got ourselves in a bit of a rut, haven't we, really, in sort of on the left in politics for a good few many decades since neoliberalism kind of pushed us in a certain direction, in that we're not ambitious enough with the state and with working out how we can challenge and tackle and ultimately take over and transform the state. So this, I think, the fact that it's new is an indication of what this is about. It's we're revisiting municipal politics, which has perhaps been forgotten since the 1980s or 1970s, when, you know, there was a massive kind of defeat, I guess, of the new left in Britain, particularly, I'm talking from a British perspective here, Thatcher's defeat of the new left and of those kind of radical British municipal socialist experiments in places like Liverpool, Lambeth, Sheffield. They were utterly devastated after those political sort of battles were fought out and lost, unfortunately. And since then, it's been given a bad name, those kind of things. And this is a kind of, it's not a rehearsal of it. It's not even just a return of it. I think Bert will probably emphasise how different it is from the old school municipal socialism, but it is certainly a new kind of municipalism with a new kind of mask.
Mm. Well, I was just thinking, because I mean, I would struggle as well to really pin it down, and, you know, and agree with lots of the things cohering here. But why then the term municipalism? Is it because of this tradition, this lineage of municipalism, municipal socialism, which, as you know, wasn't always or even very often socialist. You know, it was a compromise of sorts. Why use that term? Is municipalism or the municipality then, is it really something that we're talking about seriously in terms of an object of political strategy, or is it something that's vaguer, that is more sort of evocative of what you were saying, Bertie, about the something about the closeness, this direct interaction with the everyday around you? I mean, what's the purpose of the municipal part of it, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think that if a false opposition is to say, oh, we'd privilege the local state institutions, which we could call the municipality, but this language changes depending on which country you're using it, right, and fashions and so on. But I think it'd be a mistake to say you'll fetishize a local state institution and say that it's something that's different to a national state. This is all part of this state infrastructure. They don't exist as separate entities. It's all different elements of the same entity. So I'm are sort of wary against any, Marc Bissold got the local trap, and wary of anything that fetishizes something just because it's supposedly of a smaller scale is to miss the complexity of state structures and economies and so on and so on. So that's kind of one of my warning signs in a way of all of this. But I think some of this language of municipalism is important to talk about. This is my perception rather than kind of claim this is an absolute truth. It was popularized in Spain. And movements did take a turn, social movements post the sort of Occupy movements, occupation of the squares in 2000, beginning around 2011, took a turn towards institutions. So state institutions to say, in some areas, like Barcelona most famously, but certainly not just Barcelona, leading up to 2015, said we actually need to start taking movements into the institutions.
How can we explain this turn to the state? Was it a recognition there was a need to engage more seriously with formal sources of power? Was it opportunistic?
I think this question is, can the state, the institutions of the state, and people that work within those institutions be part of a project of autonomy, which sounds like a contradiction. But I think that's, you know, as you were talking about this idea of some form of diagonal working between, going beyond this like horizontal or verticalism, it's like, can the practices of the state be used in a way that supports and develops autonomy? That, I think, is the wager. That's what I think municipalism is fundamentally about. And as soon as you start to unpack that, you have to start talking about, well, which capacities of the state, which elements of the state, in which ways are some more capable than others to help support projects of autonomy? And if so, what do we mean? And I think that's when you can turn and say, well, yeah, there's clear capacities potentially in certain countries, in certain ways, for the local state to potentially be part of a project of autonomy. So I think that's for me, that's answering it in an abstract way. But I think fundamentally for me is what municipalism is about.
And why did it happen in Spain when it did? Is it because there was a moment, or like you said, was it opportunism? Was there a moment in just after 2008 and those few years afterwards, as austerity kicked in, was local government looking like ready for the taking? Was it like a load of social movements in the squares, if you like, occupying the squares and doing their good work with cooperative housing and so on and so forth? All that stuff around the commons about the right to the city, the stuff that activists have been plugging away at for years and years and years, reinventing the wheel every time they fail because it was inevitable failure in the face of capitalism. And I wonder whether actually at that point there's a moment where we could support this stuff a bit more seriously if we can get hold of these municipal institutions. I don't know why it happened in Spain first, but I do wonder whether that is it's that as well. There's a kind of exhaustion of, so we had to keep doing this every single time over and over again, and every generation of activists that come through have to relearn this. Yeah. We not like get some sort of, can we not have a bit more support structure here? And we need the state to do that. You know, we can't just... There are definitely good examples of co-op movements that have developed their own institutional infrastructure, but that inevitably becomes state-like, doesn't it? So in a way, why not just take hold of the stuff that's there already?
I think the story, the narrative that I've been told, or as I understand it, in the case of Barcelona, is that the one of the kind of strongest social movement organizations post the occupation of the squares was Le Pas, which is an organization that mobilizes, takes direct action, resists evictions, and also campaigns around mortgage evictions, basically. And in Spain, that was because a significant proportion of the economy was in property and in construction. When the economy tanked, lots and lots of people found themselves their mortgages underwater and couldn't pay them off. And this became a very socially important social movement. And they one of the things they were trying to do was to get a change to one of the national laws. And they managed to get a petition that I think around, I can't remember the numbers, millions of people signed to say, we need to address this. And it just got rejected. And there was a feeling that this illustrated, even if you can mobilize thousands of people on the street doing direct action to block evictions, lots of stuff which is kind of, to an extent, bread and butter, and people romanticize some of this stuff. But also, it's seriously exhausting and you can't keep doing this for a long time unless you're seeing the wins. And I think a lot of people were mobilizing huge amounts of energy, huge numbers of support for what they were doing, But it was hitting a glass ceiling, which was, well, what can social movements do if we just get shut down? Even when we mobilise millions of signatures, even when we prevent hundreds of evictions each week, like, how do we move beyond this problem? So there was this frustration based on the movement strategies that had been used that were firmly outside of the state in terms of what they were doing, coupled with the fact that we're now in 2014, this would be. So you're getting a tailing off of some of these strong street-based movements where people are growing up, you know, and they're getting exhausted and they might move, and a lot of those social ties that hold them together are dissipating or changing. And small numbers of people decided that one of the things that they should do would be to try and see if they could take over the institutions. And as I understand it, small numbers of people in Barcelona initially, like, sat around a table and I don't know whatever number were there, and made the decision that they would try to run and see if they could breach this question of taking a lot of the practices and the cultures and the politics and the transformative nature of these social movements and try and apply them, and not just take the tools of the local state and use them, but to try and transform the way that the local state operated. And I think that was what drove, that was the energy that drove this. And I think that's the story in Barcelona. The power was strong in other places, but the story, if you're in A Coruña, is not the same story as if you're in Barcelona, even though they're in Spain. So, and we're only talking about one country, so I don't think you can generalize. And the stories are definitely different if we then move to talking about Jackson or something.
Moving to the UK context, what has been happening? How has the new municipalism developed here? I'm thinking of Preston and perhaps some other examples.
I guess Preston is, and I'll explain a little bit what it is in a second, Preston is probably most, it's better defined as a kind of progressive economic agenda than a new municipalist sort of transformation of the city or of the local politics, because it's focused on a particular kind of policy framework or policy agenda as its end goal, as the kind of mechanism through which sort of social justice goals might be achieved or might be delivered, and that language of delivery of kind of. So it centres around procurement, aggressive procurement strategies, as they're known, and this kind of wider agenda called community wealth building, which comes from America, from the States, from a particular think tank called the Democracy Collaborative, which you could sort of loosely define as sort of democratic socialist, and fitting, you know, the guy sort of set that up, sort of says something famously quoted as saying, if you don't like state managerialism and you don't like corporate capitalism, what do you want? Well, this is it. This kind of localist power to the people in economic everyday life, but very much focused on setting up a model of how that might work. So the idea in Preston is to use the spending power of anchor institutions, and anchor institutions are those big civic organisations that are anchored to place, but also have an important sort of civic socio-economic role within the functioning of that place. So universities, hospitals, local government. In the case of Preston, you've got county council as well. It's the wider regional government. Things like housing associations in Britain, because obviously social housing, public housing has been partially privatised. But those organisations in the social economy and the non-profit sector are important organisations in those regards. And they have a kind of, in a way, they have interests that are aligned with a sort of progressive socialist or municipal socialist agenda around redistributing wealth, democratizing decision making. And if we can somehow bend the influenceable spend, that spending power of those institutions which isn't already taken up in national contracts or in legal contracts with whatever company that provides their computers, but that the influenceable spend, if it can be redirected toward companies that produce social value, that employ local labor, perhaps company in an ideal world, companies which are cooperatively run, have economic democracy built into their sort of governance structures, so worker-owned co-ops is the ideal one. If those kind of firms can get hold of the contracts, like cleaning, like catering, like construction for those big companies, we'll see an economic revolution in Preston's fortunes, where suddenly wealth will flow locally, and there will be opportunities for people to engage with each other and share in that new wealth production through the arena of worker-owned co-ops, for instance. That's the theory, but in terms of new municipalist politics, it doesn't really come quite in the same sort of area, I guess, as Barcelona or even the GLC, because it doesn't really, it hasn't so far managed to kind of create platforms or, and again, it's all, the onus here is on the creation of, the development of, the delivery of, because it's the, it's people doing it. It's not citizens or communities doing it, pushing against something and making it happen. It's sort of being kind of designed in by, I guess, progressive technocrats. And there are think tanks involved, like the Centre for Local Economic Strategies, or CLES, based in Manchester, and the Democracy Collaborative, and they work together, and they're using tools developed by the likes of the New Economics Foundation, and their day has come. They've really, you know, they've managed to bring these different elements together into an apparatus which does seem to work. There are, you know, studies have already been done on the performance of it. It does seem to keep the pound circulating locally and create multipliers of that. But whether how we see that model, how we see that in relation to municipalist politics is another question altogether. Where do the people come into that? You know, so there's definitely conversations in Preston going on where they're talking about how do we sort of like design in a movement? How do we make this into a movement now that we've got the ball rolling as technocrats or as policymakers or as councillors? It's driven mostly by Labour and Cooperative Party councillors in the council. Now, how do we get this thing spread out across the city? A lot of people in Preston that I've been to events and sort of seen the reception of these ideas, a lot of people have no idea it's happening. You know, people who are sort of politically alert and kind of trying to be, you know, and sort of community activists and so on, have only just starting to find out about this thing. So there's some difficulties there, some tension.
The question I then ask is, how will this help build projects of autonomy? How does this help transform the state? How does this, you know, those are the questions. So, and that's the challenge in all of these, is not like how, if what you do is work in local government, you have all of the pressures upon you of somebody who is either an employee or is elected to work in local government, you are stuck thinking about the crap you have to deal with in that role. And actually, if somebody's facing their library being shut, first and foremost, what you've got to try and do is make sure that library doesn't get shut. And that is a really, really important role. And it's like the front line, or like adult social care, for example, actually making sure that stuff gets delivered and people aren't left without care at their home or something is like absolutely crucial. The trouble is, of course, if what you hope is that some people who are elected to local government will then deliver a radical project for you, they're so caught up, such a small number of people are caught up with massively important things, that to place our hopes for social change by looking at any particular local authority and then especially then critiquing them for having not gone far enough is abdicating our own responsibility, speaking as somebody who's not part of local government, to actually start to drive forward those movements and to create the change that I think you need to see. And that's an important lesson, I think, if you do look in anywhere where there's been an attempt to work with. I think it's hard to talk about municipalism, full stop, if you aren't talking about people outside of state institutions. I think you're talking about local government policy otherwise. And you can have good local government policy and bad local government policy and everything in between. But if you want to talk about examples of Jackson, where they're very cautious about their engagement with the state there, what they're asking is, to what extent and how do we relate with the local state in such a way that we can build collective power over our own lives? And that is the question I then want to take to whether it's Preston or whether it's North Ayrshire or whether it's Hull, it doesn't matter where, is can there be local government policies that support them? And then what does that mean for social movements to actually develop to take that on? And what institutions do you actually build and how are you going to do it? So, yeah, I think that it's very easy to slip into just like, let's do a survey of what local governments are doing what in the UK and hope that we find the answer. And I'm like absolutely certain that we wouldn't find it if that's the question that we set out with.
But are we moving in the right direction if we find examples of, say, public commons partnerships?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
So rather than the private public partnerships path, which defined urban entrepreneurialism, there is a kind of new municipalism of some kind going on in Britain. The fact that councils are starting to engage with community groups or non-profit organisations rather than big profit-hungry corporations or, you know, third sector organisations.
Well, is that an unfair way of characterising, obviously, this transformative potential in policy making, but
it's still a policy agenda.
So Matt teed up, thank you, Matt, and the idea of a public common partnership is one possible way of looking at this, which is I came from a meeting this morning with, I'm not sure how much, no, it wasn't, it was with a housing activist group.
Right.
I don't know how much can or can't be public, so I was just going to talk abstractly, but it's somewhere in London. And they are looking at the opportunity of developing some collective housing where they introduce an idea of a public common partnership, which, I mean, but hopefully listeners might be aware of the idea of a public-private partnership. This is actually challenging the way that we think about the relationship between communities, community organisations, and the state as partners in the ownership and the governance of assets and resources. So it could be land, it could be housing, it could be an energy company. And in this case, the people we went to meet with are not policymakers. They're not people in the local authority. They're the people who are actually pushing to make this a reality. They are in conversation and they are working with that particular local authority to try and realise this. And from what I understand, there is a real willingness to look for new workable ideas as to how we can actually meet the needs that we want. So this isn't just like a leftist wet dream, but like fundamentally you do need housing, you do need electricity, you do need transport, right? So how do we deliver those things differently in a way where we are also more empowered and it is better and it is cheaper? So we've got to do all of those things. Yeah. But I think a really good example where we probably can talk about it more openly is in Haringey.
The market.
With the market, yeah. Do you know much? Do you want to introduce it or not? So, like, so this is a, there's a big campaign around what's known as it's Ward's Corner Market. And Haringey itself has been referred to as like the first Corbyn Council. And that's actually because the
thing is, it's North London.
North London. And the leader of that council, Joseph Ejiofor, I think, is also on the board of Momentum, which is why it was referred to as a Corbyn Council, like. Momentum-led council, and there's now like an open struggle taking place over the Ward's Corner Market there that in many ways I think could become an example of where you move towards something that I would find inspiring in terms of practices that you could say municipalist practices in the UK, or it could be an example of where community groups get actively shat on by a local government who have got a lot of rhetoric, but when push comes to shove, might actually just close down these opportunities. And it could go either way in this situation. So, and it,
but the market is obviously at the centre of Latin American kind of Colombian, particularly sort of small businesses, eateries, lots of sort of like, yeah, like family owned shops, businesses, all sorts of things. And this kind of ramshackle collection of four story kind of amazingness. It's an incredible community asset.
Yeah,
it's kind of doesn't. It's not in keeping with the, I guess, the council's plans for the wider area of Tottenham, South Tottenham, Seven Sisters, which involves demolishing it and building.
Exactly. So a compulsory purchase order was signed by the previous administration, which would allow a development company called Grainger to come in, as you say, demolish it and build a glass shiny affair that you can see exactly. You can imagine what it will look like. Promises have been made that local market traders would be able to still be in that place. Market traders say that the rents would be too high, and so it's a form of flushing people out of there. I think the realist in you should probably know how this will end up. and so they've turned around and said, well, actually, this land's owned by TfL, Transport for London. Sadiq Khan could come in and cancel that compulsory purchase order and say TfL need to allocate this and we're going to pursue a different model for this market. The market traders, working with some activist groups as well that are there and some architects, have developed a new community plan for the market, and one of their things considering is, well, how do we actually go into partnership so that the local state will be in partnership in terms of the ownership and governance of this market, which instead of it becoming a large development where money gets sucked out of this area into Grainger's back pocket, wherever it will be, we actually retain a lot of these key cultural elements that are there, so it doesn't become an issue of cultural cleansing. And it's worth pointing out that the UN themselves, twice now, I think, has said that this case have intervened. They have no formal power, but have soft power, and have intervened to say the case that's happening actually contravenes lots of basic human rights. So it's a pretty
contemporary UK thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's worth putting this in. If you're talking about municipalism in whatever way you define it, you've got an opportunity here where you've got a strong it's not formally a community asset in terms of ownership, but
right.
you've got a strong and important cultural asset that's economically important for small market traders and the communities around them. You've got a local authority that potentially has the capacity, working with Sadiq Khan as the Mayor of London and so on, to transfer this to support a new model of ownership and governance. And you're getting international attention on this in terms of, if we stick with the current traditional model of selling off land, selling off assets, and as the only way of attracting capital into an area, and this sole model. So all of this is taking place under what's supposedly the leading Momentum Council. And I think that is a place to watch for your question, was like, where do we look in the UK, right? A place to watch what happens, and to also to try and mobilise and support the people there. That is a really important case of where a different pathway could be taken. Most recently, I know this week even, the market traders have faced, I think it's about a 35% increase in their rents. It's a very clear process to flush them out. And if you couldn't come up with a clearer example, supposedly you want to keep these market traders in your posts once you've done your glass development. I mean, all of the signs are there that the aim is to get these market traders out and demolish it. So I think that's a really clear example where a mixture of new approaches to economy, new approaches to ownership and governance, and collaborations with the local government could lead us to quite literally different visions of what our cities look like, different pathways.
Fantastic, guys. So last speculative, have to end with a big question, I suppose. So what do we think will happen in the next year or two coming? What could happen? So what could happen around new municipalism, around this kind of this project, this political project, here, elsewhere?
What I hope would happen is that those international links that have already started to be sort of solidified through networks like Pillar Cities are extended and strengthened and deepened, because that's something we haven't really talked about. That transnationalism is an integral part of municipalism of the past. In the late 19th century and early 20th century, the municipal movements across Europe and America had incredibly dense networks that, you know, then a lot of study tours and kind of, it was the start of policy tourism kind of, but also the start of social movement, municipal movement, galvanization in those periods. And we're seeing it today now as well. And I think the only chance of survival for these otherwise isolated kind of, city-based experiments is for connections to be made, trade connections, supply, thinking about supply chains, thinking about how we can think about alternative circuits of value. Cooperation Jacks has been mentioned a lot. They're pursuing this idea that how do we think through an alternative circuit of value in which our supply chains are through cooperative producers and cooperative suppliers that are largely outside of commodified networks. Is that possible in today's capitalism? Not completely, but if we could start to build a network of a cooperative network as such, those platforms in those cities might have a better chance of survival when they're being, they're up against the nation state and they're also up against global capital. So it's a tough one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's... So we released a report, this public common partnership report that was mentioned beforehand, earlier this year, with Commonwealth, which is a new organisation in the UK led by Matt Lawrence. And that's received quite a lot of interest, and I'm buoyed by the fact that it received interest both from politicians but also activist groups. So it didn't just fall on, it wasn't just attractive to one particular type of agent, let's say. I think I'm really hopeful about that, and a lot of different groups are considering what it would mean to take that forward and how to develop that as an approach. I think there is a hunger for new political thinking and what new types of action can be taken, and what does that look like? How do we actually build power? Like, what's that mean today if we're doing things differently? And I think you can see a hunger for new ways of acting coming from some people in local authorities as well, both in London. I mean, obviously you mentioned Preston, but I think these perhaps like some of these binaries between like social movements good, state bad, or vice versa, or wherever you sit on that spectrum. I mean, if there's one thing that's being challenged by that, is that there's a lot of people who recognise the need to do things quite radically different and are very open to thinking how the hell do we do that. And what I'd hope to see over the next year would be a lot of people being a bit more prepared to experiment critically, both from within local authorities and social movements as well. And that doesn't mean giving up on all of our experiences and everything we know about this stuff in the past, but that's what I'd hope to see.
thanks to you for listening.
For more information, visit our website, urbanpolitical.podigee.io.
Please subscribe and follow us on Twitter.